I want to briefly describe who we are and what we do, and then we'll actually start talking about what really happened on that day and how we coped and how we recovered. Finally, I want to wrap it up with why you should care. I mean, beyond just basic information or abstract knowledge, there's some very important things that you need to take away from this and take back with you to work. And hopefully I'll get all those points across to you by the end of the talk. And I do need to raise this up just a little. Well, that's probably all right the way it is. I'm a member of the Web Farm team. And we serve actually over 50 sites on about 200 servers in our Web Farm. And we are the team that supports these servers, keeps them running, fixes them when they're broken, makes sure all the right bandwidth is there, does all the infrastructure, everything from layer 1 on up to layer 7, all the way up to the boundaries of our building, and sometimes even beyond. You know, we do more than just CNN.com. We also do the financial site, the sports site. We do HBO, NASCAR, Cartoon Network. You can see the whole list up there of all the other sites that we do. We do all the WB stuff. Pretty much any kind of property, any kind of Turner Broadcasting property, we probably run the website for it. And that's an awful lot of sites, and that's an awful lot of traffic, and an awful lot of management in terms of systems administration. But by far and away, the largest of those sites is CNN.com. That's the one that sees the most traffic, and is also the one that is the most visible. Because when there is big news, that's the one that everyone seems to go to. Now, the interesting thing is, this is also the site that everyone tests their stuff against, as I've found out many times over the past few years. Coming into September 11th, for the better part of this year, in terms of bandwidth, we had two OC12s coming into the building and seven OC3s, and that totals about something slightly over two gigabits per second coming into the building. We've actually improved upon that since then, if you can even consider that as being imaginable for what we do. And this gives you an idea of where we stood, at least at that point in time, as far as bandwidth. And also, I mean, these are, you know, nine different circuits coming in from five different places to give us as much redundancy as we can. Our workhorse server that we use in the farm is a Sun 420R. We use the term 4x4 to indicate that it comes with 4 gigabytes of memory and 4 processors. This is the machine that we like to use. This isn't always the one that we use everywhere, but certainly our big sites are run off of these 4x4s. And these processors, the 420R processor, the 450 megahertz. We don't always have 4 gigabytes of RAM, but the newer ones do. And we're slowly trying to bring the rest of them up to date. So we got a little bit of computing power in the computer room there. What we have each site positioned with a certain amount of capacity. Now, these numbers that are up here on the screen are actually numbers before the event. And this is a typical sort of layout for a typical sort of day. We'll have a certain number of machines behind each site to handle what we believe to be the customary load for that site. CNN almost always has the most. And we'll move them around as needed. We'll swing them between sites as needed to put capacity behind the site that we think will need it in the upcoming days. Certain events can cause traffic to increase dramatically to certain sites, and there's things that we know that are going to happen. We say, well, gee, we're going to need some more power behind this site over here. So, for example, like when a NASCAR race gets delayed into Monday, Sunday night, those guys are on the phone. They're saying, we need to move, you know, 8 boxes or so over behind NASCAR because we know come Monday afternoon when the race starts, that site is going to get hammered. So a lot of our positioning depends upon foreknowledge of an event that's coming up. Any kind of promotional events like Cartoons Toonami, which has a big presence online as well. These sorts of things we coordinate with the organizations that are doing it so that we know when it's coming. And so that we know that on a given day, we need to move machines from here to there. So these numbers are usually in flux. We have a minimum we like to keep for each site, and we have a bunch of spares that usually end up behind CNN, and sometimes they'll move around to the other sites as needed. But the key here is we are able to plan ahead. Okay, that's the key thing to remember. In order to make use of all these servers, we have load balancers in front of them, of course. What a godsend. I mean, we used to run them without them years ago before the load balancers were even out there, and it was much, much harder to run these machines. Of course, it didn't have as many machines back then. I can't imagine running it now without load balancers. I really can't. Back then, we would do things like, you know, move the virtual IP address from one machine to another, which means bringing it down over here and very quickly bringing it up over there. Not a good way to run things. But the load balancers run particularly well. They give us a lot of flexibility, and as you can see from the diagram, these are the kind of load balancers that the return traffic from the server does not go back through the load balancer. And that is very helpful to us, because that's actually where the bulk of the traffic is. Now, I didn't draw the arrows proportionately in the slide, but the requests coming in are really, really small. Those of you who know a lot about HTTP, the requests coming in are really small, and the responses going back are usually quite large. So it's good that the return traffic doesn't go back through the load balancer, because, well, that just won't work. Now, this is a chart of typically what we do, just to give you some examples of the kinds of traffic we normally experience. On September 11th of 2000, so a year before our event, our peak, now, see, we have two sets of numbers. We have the numbers that the marketing people and the advertisers think are important, which is the number of eyeballs that have seen our site. And that's page views. We have the numbers that I care about, which are the hits, because the hits mean a lot to me, because that means that's how busy my servers are. I call them my servers. They're our servers. No, I don't do quite as much with them as one of the gentlemen who's sitting down here does. Your TED servers. Well, I don't know. So what I care about is the fact that on September 11th of 2000, we hit a peak of 220,000 hits a minute. You know, that tells me about how many servers I need to have behind there. Okay. But it also turned out that on that day we did a total of 148 million hits, and we had about 11, almost 12 million page views on that day. And that was a typical day. Even from there up through September of this year, that's pretty typical. Typical weekday. Now, the other date that's up there is November 8th of 2000, if you recall, if you can think back that far. That was the day after the election. Okay. Remember that? Remember the election? I know it was a long time ago. The election that wouldn't die, okay? And we saw the traffic on the site, believe me. You know, we figured we need a lot of machines for November 7th and rolling into the morning of November 8th, and then we can send them all back. No. But anyway, I put that one up there because that remained our record. We did 139 million page views on that day, on November 8th. And that was our record. And it was also our record for the peak load, which was 1.2 million hits a minute. And I think back to not too long ago, just a few years ago, I think it was Dan Klein had a presentation at one of these conferences that I think the title of it was, "What Do You Do With a Million Hits a Day?" Okay, now we're dealing with a million hits a minute. Things have changed. Now, the day before the event, September 10th, you can see that we actually had fewer hits per minute. We were down 156,000 hits per minute as our peak for that day, serving slightly fewer hits, total 104 million hits on that day, but more page views, 14 million page views. Part of that is because we went through, over the course of the year, we had reorganized the page. The page looked a little bit different. I don't remember exactly when they made that change, but the density of the page changed. So a page view consisted of fewer hits. There were less things that it needed to go pull in order to build the page and put it on your screen. So that's why we had more page views but fewer hits. That actually helped us out a lot, because that means, you know, the typical sort of hit, hey, it doesn't impact our servers as much. Okay. Now, we expect to have high demand. I mean, this is one of the unique things about a news site, is that the traffic is very volatile. It can change quickly. And so we have to be prepared to move quickly if there's a breaking news story. And we expect this to happen. And we also have to be prepared to move things around if we know there's an event coming up. So swings are expected, and there are steps that we take to do these swings. When we're in a high traffic event, there's typically three things that we do. Well, actually, there's three things that we do in general. One of them we do ahead of time, which is to pre-position capacity. If we know the event is coming, we can plan accordingly. Pre-position capacity, make sure that each site has a minimum number of machines to meet our minimum needs. And two other things that we do, we will add servers as needed, that is, add capacity to the site. But the other thing that we do that I think is just as important is we try to get hits off of the site. And this is done primarily by lightening the page. Those of you who visit our site often have probably seen that in other events, where if there's a major story and if our servers start getting in trouble, our first line of defense really is to call down to the editorial staff and say, lighten the page, get some stuff off of there. Usually the first thing to go are the advertisements, which I'm sure some of you will probably appreciate. Yes. So this falls under reducing the page complexity. And we also arrange things so that the images themselves are not served by the same servers as the HTML. And that helps to split things up a little bit so that we can get, because images, those are easy to serve. Static content is very easy to serve. It's not nearly as challenging as the HTML itself. So those are the three, that's the three-pronged approach that we use for managing unexpected loads. Just to show you a little bit about how we lighten the page up, this is pretty much the standard page. I mocked this up, so you know any errors here are mine. This didn't come from the guys that do the templates. You know, we have the nav bar down the left. We have the lead story right up front and center, a little promo thing up to the right of the logo. To the right of the lead story, we have the headlines usually associated with the lead story if it's got several sub-stories going on. A section where the, you know, there's the current markets, what they're doing up or down. Then we have what we call the fold. The fold is a separation, a horizontal separation of the page. It'd be like the fold in a newspaper. That's where the term comes from, where you fold the newspaper over. The stuff under the fold isn't quite as important as the stuff over the fold. And that's where your other headlines are, where your sections are, your promos are down there, and all that other stuff. So that's the standard page. Now, we've actually got two different pages we can go to. Okay? We have what we call the split page, which is we take everything below the fold, everything at the fold and below, and take it off the main page, and put a link down there. Click here for more headlines. Right? That's the half page, or the split page, we call it. Then there's another one we call the ultralight page. And this is basically stripped down to just the story. Now, there's still a lot on there. I mean, this looks like it's pretty minimal, but there's actually, we'll have a picture up there. We'll have a little bit of news. We'll have some content. We'll have a couple of other decorations up there. Maybe we'll even have it in two columns. And maybe it'll be a two-column thing. But it's still, you know, 20K or so. It's still a little bit of HTML out there. And then click here for more news down at the bottom. So that's an overview of what we are and what we are, who we are and what we do. So now we get to actually talk about the event, as I've come to call it, September 11th. And what I'm going to do here, first I'm going to go through a timeline of events of what happened when, kind of interleaving the events of the day with what was going on with us. And then we'll go on and we'll talk a little bit about what went wrong and what we found out as we were troubleshooting, what we had to do to get things running again. Okay. So at 8:45 a.m., American Airlines Flight 11 crashed into Tower 1. Actually, I need to. I'm just going, you know, having troubles here with the AV guys are going nuts right now saying, don't do that. Yeah, okay. Okay. And at 8:45, by the way, our load was approximately 84,000 hits a minute. That was a typical load for that time of day. Okay. We had 10 servers behind CNN, by the way. I'll talk more about that in a minute, why we only had 10. At 8:50, the load was now 87,610 hits a minute. At 8:55, the load had climbed to 129,000 hits a minute. You can see how quickly it's going up. At 8:56, the story was actually published on the website. It takes a little while even for the breaking news to get rolling through the system. So that the first story was published at 8:56. At 9 o'clock, the load was 229,000 hits a minute. Now notice that that's more than double where we started. And that was over the span of, 15 minutes. Okay, it got worse. At that point, things started going wrong. And one of the things that we lost first was our monitoring. So from this point on, we can't even tell what our load was. Or at least, I could tell you what the load was, but it'd be meaningless because it wasn't reflective of the traffic coming in. As that happened about 9:05. We took load measurements every 5 minutes. The first page went out. Now, we coincidentally call these 911 pages. And that went out at 9:01. It's still on my phone, by the way. I still have it on the phone. And it was just a page that said basically what the story was. You know, breaking news story, plane crashes into World Trade Center, which even just reading that alone is pretty frightening. At 9:03, United Airlines Flight 175 crashed into Tower 2. And at 9:03, right about that time, one of the gentlemen who was on the staff of the people that handle the day-to-day operations of these things was sitting at his desk with the TV on, as he normally does. We have TVs, by the way. This is really cool. It comes with the office. It's great. You know, first day at work, they asked me, what size TV do you want? It's like, wow, that's cool. But on September 11th, actually, it wasn't cool. So just like a normal workday, he gets in and he turns the TV on and he sits down and starts monitoring the systems and he sees the breaking news come on. And as he's watching it, he saw the second one hit. And it was right about that point they decided, we better do something now. And he got everyone that he could find who was in the building and said, we need to start moving machines now. I mean, he didn't even, you know, the page was still going out. It was still being mailed out to everyone. And even at that point, they knew the first one had happened. But the first one was an accident, right? We all thought. Okay. When the second one hit, it became clear this was far bigger than anything we'd imagined. So we started swinging boxes right away. But swinging boxes takes time, and I'll talk more about that later. Right about 9:05, according to our metering systems, indicated that we actually had less traffic than we did at 9 o'clock, and of course I know that's wrong. So I declare that at that point in time, we were in the beginning of congestion collapse. Okay. We were still serving stuff, we were doing pretty well, but there's no way we were keeping up with the traffic. And then it just went downhill from there, as far as the traffic goes. The second 9:11 page actually did hit my phone at 9:11. That one had the bridge number. Now, anytime we have a breaking news story and we have an all-hands page, we get everyone on a bridge so that we can talk about what we're doing and try to get the problems fixed. That second page had the bridge number on it where everyone could call in. This is a local bridge within the building. At 9:15, there was, well, about 9:15, I'm not exactly sure what time, somewhere in this time, between 9:10 and 9:20, we switched to a split page. Okay. At 9:17, all the New York City airports were shut down. At about 9:27, the third 9/11 page went out. And the reason we had a third one go out was because the bridge that we got only had 8 ports on it. Because that's all that was available in-house. So they spent the network operations team spent the next 10 or 15 minutes trying to find a bridge outside that we could use. And they weren't able to find that until 9:20 or so. And sent the page out with the new number at 9:27. At 9:40, the airspace across all of the United States was closed down. At 9:42, I know that we had 18 servers behind CNN. That's up from 10. I think it was earlier than that, but that's when the mail went out, saying these are the machines we now have behind CNN. I'm pretty sure it was actually much before then, but it took until 9:42 for someone to have enough spare cycles to actually send the mail. Okay. So by then we had at least 18 servers, probably more. At 9:43, you'd forgotten about the third one, hadn't you? American Airlines Flight 77 crashed into the Pentagon. See, this was just the warm-up. Okay. 9:47, the page was stripped to an absolute bare minimum. And I've heard comments from people saying that that was a very interesting thing to see when the site finally started working again. And we'll talk more about that. At 10:05, Tower 2 collapsed. At 10:10, at 10:10, United 93 crashed in Pennsylvania. And at 10:28, Tower 1 collapsed. By 10:30, we had 24 servers behind CNN. And by 11 o'clock, I think because we got more people doing it, everyone we could find was swinging servers, I think, we were up to 44. So we did pretty good there in half an hour. We got 20 boxes swung. That was quite something. At 11:15, but even at 11 o'clock, with 44 servers behind CNN, we still weren't keeping up. The machines were still failing. They still couldn't get all the traffic out. And in fact, the machines were experiencing such high loads that we couldn't even get into half of them. We couldn't even log into half of them. And we decided at one point to go to a different configuration, which I'll talk about that in a minute. But we couldn't even get it on there. So the decision was made that we know these machines will recover. We know this failure mode. We know the machines will recover if we take the traffic off of them. They'll recover on their own. They don't need to be rebooted. So the decision was made at about 11:15 to momentarily shut down all of the ports from the switches to the load balancers. The ports the load balancers were connected into were actually shut off. So we actually did shut the site down. Don't tell PR, by the way. They don't know that. We did shut everything down. Within a few minutes, the machine started recovering. We were able to get in, make our configuration changes. We turned the ports back on. And we actually started doing pretty well after that. By 11:30, we were able to serve HTML again. So that means we were out for about 2.5 hours, swinging boxes and doing a lot of other work. And by 11:30, we were able to serve HTML. Unfortunately, we were not able to serve images. And we'll come to that in a little bit. We didn't get the images working until a little bit later. By 12:25, we had monitoring partially restored. By 1 p.m., we had found 8 more servers. I think we finally ended up with about 52 servers behind CNN. Now, consider that for elections, we had 80. But we were able to plan ahead for that. And to this day, I mean, even after talking with Dan over here, to this day, different Dan, to this day, I have no idea where we found all those boxes. OK? Okay, I don't know where they came from. I know that we stripped all of our other sites down to the bare minimum. We had every other site down to like one or two boxes, except for the ones that couldn't be touched because they're unique configurations. But I didn't even know we had that many servers floating around. Somehow they got them. I think they did a lot of juggling, and they got them, and they got them in there. And we needed every last one of them. So by 1:30, we finally had image service restored, and we'll talk a little bit more about that later. Here's an amusing, interesting note. At 2:21 in the afternoon, we actually moved two servers back to Cartoon Network because it was experiencing very high loads. We got a letter a few days later. Maybe it was the same day. I don't know. We got a, I think it was an electronic letter that day or the next day, thanking us for keeping Cartoon Network up and running. Because remember, a lot of schools closed. Not just in New York and Washington, but a lot of schools across the country sent the kids home because they were scared. So they thanked us because they sent the kids. Okay. I wasn't sure I was going to be able to get through this. All right, at 2:55 in the afternoon, we went back to a light page. Remember, by 1:30, we had everything pretty much stable. Okay. So by 2:55, we were able to get back to a light page. Now remember, I went through the pages before. We had, you know, the ultralight page. We went beyond ultralight, okay, went down to bare minimum. And then we were able to come back to what we call a light page. And so we were able to fatten the site up a little bit by 2:55, be able to take care of it. By 4:15 in the afternoon, we hit our peak load, and that was 1.1 million hits a minute. Okay. All right. So that was the basic timeline of events that we went through. And this was just a frame of reference, just to recall the numbers I gave you for 9/10. On September 10th, the day before the event, we hit our peak of 156,000 hits a minute. That was our peak for that day with 104 million hits, 14 million page views. On the 11th, that was our peak, 1.1 million hits a minute, 411 million total hits, 132 million page views, and we were down for 3.5 hours. Okay, we were down for the worst of it. And you can see that just looking at the total page views, the number of eyeballs hitting the site went up by an order of magnitude. Okay. And then the next day was even worse as far as traffic. Fortunately, we didn't have any problems the next day because we were ready for it. We didn't have as high of a load. It was interesting because on September 11th, everyone came and the thing went through the ceiling, and I'll have a graph of that for you in a minute. On the next day, we had high loads, but they weren't as high, but they were persisted through most of the day. So they were up here and they stayed up there for most of the day. And we served a record 300 million page views on September 12th. That was so far beyond anything we had ever done before and anything we had ever thought of doing before, and anything we had ever planned before, that we were all just astounded. The previous record set during the elections is about around 120, 130 million, and we did more than double that on Wednesday. Just astounding. It's just astounding. The unbelievable demand, the thirst, the requirement for information. Okay, now this graph is extrapolated. This is a bit of an estimate. We took what data points we had. We made a few estimates. I won't say guesses, door estimates. That's what I keep telling myself anyway. Then we applied a model to the data points that we had. We've seen breaking news stories before, okay? We know basically what the traffic looks like in a breaking news story. We can go back and look at other events that we've had. And the interesting thing is, whenever there's a story like this, that's probably a bad way of phrasing it. Whenever there's a breaking news story, there's always this tremendous swell at the very beginning of the story. Everyone comes to the site. What's going on? What's going on? Okay? They see it. They see there's not a whole lot of news yet, and they go away. And then later in the day, they come back, and we don't get as high of a load, although we end up serving more pages total towards the end of the day. They aren't all coming at the same time. So using that model of previous events, we applied them to the data points that we had for that day, and this is what we came up with. And we estimated the peak demand, not that we could keep up with it, but the peak demand to be close to 1.8 million hits a minute, which was far beyond anything that we would be able to handle. Okay, and then it dropped way off, and then came back up. We did see that peak, the nearly 1.2 million. You can see that around 3 o'clock in the afternoon. That's in there, and then it tapered off a bit after that. By the way, the red dashed line that you see towards the bottom of the graph, that was Monday's peak. And I want you to pay special notice to that. That was our average peak. That's what we expected to see. And you can see what we got. If that estimate is correct, the 1.8 million hits a minute estimate is correct, that means that a demand for our site was 20 times what it normally was. And to make it worse, well, I'll get to that in a minute. At 8:45, we had 84,000 hits a minute. At 8:50, we had 87,000 hits a minute. At 8:55, we had 129,000 hits a minute. And at 9 o'clock, 229,000 hits a minute before we entered congestion collapse. Based on that and other data points that we have, one of the members of our team fit a curve to it and calculated that the rate of incoming traffic doubled every 7 minutes and kept doubling every 7 minutes until we hit our approximate peak. This is just, I mean, I don't know about you guys, I've never seen anything like this before. Okay. Maybe you can see why we had a few problems. And there's the peak that we estimated, almost 1.8 million hits a minute. So what were we facing on that day? You know, what were the problems that we faced? Extremely rapid traffic growth, as I just said. And some other interesting little tidbits that you might like to hear about. Some of the senior staff, our boss, the person that I report directly to, the guy that runs the whole group, and two members of his senior staff, two of my peers, were on the road, were traveling. Two of them were visiting AOL in Washington, D.C. The third one was visiting our FN studios in New York City. To make things even more interesting, I'm a participant in Turner's unofficial telecommuting program. Unofficial because I don't know if they know about it, but and so one day a week I telecommute, which actually is very effective. Given the commute that I have going downtown, I'm glad that I'm able to do that once a week. And I can be almost as effective at home. I mean, quite seriously, not exaggerating. I can be almost as effective at home as I am at work. And I stay home one day a week. And it's always the same day a week that I stay home. That day of the week is Tuesday. Okay, so I had planned on staying home. In fact, I did end up, because by the time this was all happening, I wasn't sure that I could get downtown anymore. And I didn't want to risk it. It's a 45-minute drive in no traffic, and I wasn't sure what it was going to be like, and I did not want to be out of touch. So that hampered us a little bit, not me being home, but I mean the other folks being on travel, hampered us a little bit, but not too much. It just made it more challenging, I think. Just another challenge to overcome. We didn't have any bridges locally that we could do. By the time we tried to get a hold of a local bridge, they were all used up for the news people. And we could only get 8 ports. And so there was a delay in getting everyone together in the same place electronically, a delay getting everyone together in the same place so we could figure out what in the world we were going to do. When we finally did get a bridge, I don't remember what company we got it from, it worked for a while. I couldn't get in. You know, I got the page and I tried dialing up and I kept getting busy signals. And it turns out that the equipment that supported that bridge was in New York City. Okay, and if you recall, there were some pretty serious problems as far as telecommunications in southern Manhattan because of all that was going on. The next problem that we had, the whole thing that was causing the site not to work was cascading failures. I'll talk about those. We had a lot of land congestion as well, as you can well imagine. Some of it was actually unexpected and unnecessary. We had a lot of overhead, which only really showed up under heavy load. We had a lot of overhead, a lot of broadcasts that didn't need to be there. And until you see it under heavy load, it doesn't really manifest itself. And the image servers were also a problem. Okay? So what we were able to do, we were able to find more servers to add in there, but adding them is a time-consuming process. We were able to reduce the page complexity down to next to nothing. What we also did is we took the web configuration, we paid for our web server, so you can probably guess which one it is. We went to the web server configuration and just took everything out that really wasn't absolutely necessary. Ordinarily, we serve parsed HTML. We do that. We parse every HTML file that goes out. We took that out. We took parsing out. Stripped it down to the absolute bare minimum. We actually went ahead and did the site restart. We attempted to use this new image cache in a hurry, and it didn't work. So we had to have a fallback, and eventually we moved the images to an off-site service. Okay. Let me talk for a minute about some of these points. Reducing the page complexity, this is normally done when our boss says to do it, or when one of the senior staff says to do it. That is, you know, we call down to, we have a very good relationship with the editorial staff, the people that put the stories up on CNN. In fact, we have a little kiosk down there, and in situations like this, someone on our staff will go down to the room where the editors and writers are and sit at the kiosk and get on the bridge and interact with them. They're our link to the people who are doing the content. And we can, through these people, we can tell them, all right, you know, strip the page, take it down to a split page, take it down to an ultralight page, take the ads off. Because we don't do that. We don't do the content. We just do the service. But they don't do it till we tell them to do it. And that went out kind of late because we had trouble setting the bridge up. So we didn't really get that to them until way after congestion collapse happened. And that really would have helped us if we got it done earlier. The split page was at 22K. And it wasn't enough. So the guy that was down there said, we need to get it lower. And they came up with a form. They said, well, how about this? No, lower. Well, we can take a couple more things out. Yes, take those out. No, lower, lower, lower. Take everything out. And what we finally ended up with was 1,200 bytes, 1,247 bytes of HTML, a logo, and a picture. And that was it. Got to have the logo there, right? And it had to have the picture there, because that's what everyone wanted to see. 1,200 bytes, which coincidentally fits inside of an Ethernet frame. Don't know if the headers did, but the actual HTML did. I don't think we've ever gone that. I don't even think we were that low when we launched. We've never gone that low before. It was, you know, wow, it's like, you know, the early 90s or something, as far as web pages go. Oh, wait, I was going to warn you. The next two things I'm going to show you what the split page looked like and then what the absolute bare bones page looked like. And I meant to warn you ahead of time, we do have pictures on these pages, okay? I wrestled with whether or not I should actually put them up there, but I decided in the end, yeah, we should put them up. This was the page you never saw. This was the page that was published at 9:30 in the morning, and I doubt anyone actually ever saw the thing, because we were so far behind the curve at that point that very few requests were actually being served by then. So that's the page you never saw, probably. And, oh, you did. Thank you. I'm glad somebody did. Wonderful. As you can see, you know, we're still only at half height, okay? And we still got a lot of other stuff up there, right? But that wasn't good enough. So this is what we ended up with. That was it. Logo, picture, text, 1,200 bytes. That was the 10 a.m. page. And that's the way it stayed until about 3 o'clock in the afternoon. And that actually did help quite a bit. I mean, we were way beyond what we could do, but having that there made recovery easier. If we'd stayed, even with the ultralight page, if we'd stayed with that, it would have been a lot harder to recover. But having that there helped tremendously. Okay. Cascading failures. This is the problem that we face anytime we get into a situation like this. We've got too much traffic for our servers to handle. Sometimes adding the capacity isn't enough. If you get behind the curve, if you get behind the traffic to the point where you are in the middle of congestion collapse, even bringing the number of servers back up to what you need isn't enough, and I'll tell you why. Okay? Let's say that we have four boxes behind a load balancer. Just for the sake of example, we've got these four. Well, those are green, good. We got these four boxes sitting behind a load balancer, and each one of them, let's say, is capable of doing, just for the sake of example, 20,000 hits per minute per box. What's the upper limit of our site right now? 80,000 hits a minute, right? What if the load suddenly spikes up to 90,000? What's going to happen? You'd expect that all the machines would fail. Well, it's not that simple, all right? They don't all fail at the same time. So they do all start loading up as the spike comes in, as more traffic comes in, and they'll start failing pretty much one by one. Each box is now at about 30,000 hits a minute beyond what it can do. The load starts climbing up. and the requests start stacking up in the queue, and it gets to the point where the box is so far behind that it can't serve anything. It's red. But not all of them do that at the same time. They kind of do them one by one, or by in twos or threes or what have you. In this scenario, it would be one would go out before the others. So we add our fifth box in. Now, theoretically, at this point, we have enough capacity, right? Because I said 90,000 hits a minute was what we have. We have capacity for 100,000 hits a minute, theoretically. But one of them is still down. Well, not down, but it is so far behind that it can't serve anything. One of them is incapable of serving anything. So really, we only have four. And that's not enough. What's going to happen? The new box is instantly going to load up. The load balancer is going to say, oh, wow, someone with nothing to do. Okay. Each box, because we got one of them failed. Now, the load balancers are really good at what they do. Right? They're really good at finding out that a box isn't working. And if a box isn't working, they put all the traffic over in the boxes that are. But in this situation, that's hurting us. Because they're not going to this box. We still have enough load to saturate the remaining boxes, 22,500 hits a minute per box. So what's going to happen? One of those is going to fail. Now, I said earlier in this failure mode, when one of these boxes fails, it can come back simply by removing the traffic from it, which is exactly what the load balancer does. It says, well, he's not responding. We won't send him anything. Guess what? It comes back to life on its own. Unix is a wonderful operating system. Okay. You'd never get that with the other one. So it comes back to life, and the load balancer says, oh good, it's awake, and sends everything to it. But in the meantime, one of our other boxes has failed. We're no better off. We've still only got four of them running. And this just keeps going on and on and on. So adding the fifth box wasn't enough. We've got to add like two or three more if we're going to come out of congestion collapse. This is what we see. We see this every time we get into congestion collapse, we see this. There's always some subset of boxes. There's always some group of boxes that have failed and that are not taking traffic at this moment in time. So we either have to add enough boxes in to cover those that are failing, or we have to do something more drastic. Okay? Now, the machines that are up and running, that are doing their job, they're actually managing to serve hits. So maybe we can get like half of our hits out. So doing something more drastic really is more drastic. And then we have to admit we actually did shut the site down, and that's not good for certain things. Well, if you only have 10 machines in your pool, you can find a few more to throw in. We had 50. So at any given point in time, we probably had 10 of them failed. We didn't have another 10 to put in. And actually, we'd taken more than 10, probably like 15 or 20. We didn't have it. We had everything we could find. And as I say, I don't know where they all came from. We had everything we could find in there. It was enough to serve the load, but it wasn't enough to get us out of congestion collapse. It wasn't enough to stop the cascading failures because once they had already started. Okay, it is much, much harder to get out of the cascading failure mode than it is to actually have enough in there to begin with, staying ahead of the curve, as I say. Okay, so a site restart sometimes, that's your last resort. And that's what we ended up doing on September 11th, shutting down all the ports, letting everything die down, and then bringing everything back in again. The other thing that we considered doing was, after September 11th, the other thing we very seriously looked at was rate limiting. And that can be effective as well, where you say, don't send more than this amount to that box. And if you run out, well, you just got to throw the rest away. Okay. But we weren't using that up until then. And now we're considering using it. But it has its own problems. That's not going to solve all the problems either. That solves one problem but creates others, which is why we've been reluctant to go ahead and do it. There's another interesting thing to note about all this, though. User-induced cascading failures. And this gets back to I think, the way Tom introduced me. I think that the average user was doing more than just hitting reload. He was trying every site he could think of. So you had people who normally read one of our competitors' sites, whom I won't name. Trying to hit one of our competitors' sites, they weren't doing any better than we were. So they were just trying every new site they could think of. So now we've got every user. I mean, normally we have, some percentage of the users read our site, some percentage read our competitor sites. Well, now everyone was trying every site. And this is one of the reasons why we had so much traffic, was because everyone was trying everything they could think of to get whatever news they could. Okay, so this is kind of a user-induced cascading failure. failures of one news site were cascading over into another, making our jobs even harder than they already were. I mean, it was hard enough keeping up with our own load. Everyone was trying to take on everyone else's load, too, and it just wasn't working. Okay. What we finally did to come out was the things that I've talked about. We reduced the page complexity, something we always do. We stripped the configurations bare so that the things weren't doing anything at all other than just what they needed to be doing. And we did that the site restart bit. When I say stripped the configuration bare, I mean stripped it bare. We took out everything. No plugins, no parsing, no redirects, no name translations, no logging, no client hosts, that is the URL host, so that you come with a different host header and you get a different thing. We took that out. Took out the performance monitoring stuff. Oops. Well, maybe we took one thing out too many. This is one reason why our performance monitoring stopped. Actually, it had already stopped. So I figured, I guess we had nothing to lose. We'll take that out, too. We started putting it back later after we recovered. But we really were in a state where we didn't care. Monitoring, well, we had other ways of monitoring, I suppose, is get in the box and see what the load average was. But we really needed to get the site back, and we took out everything we could think of. Okay. At that particular point in time, we were in transition from using an external image cache, an image cache from a service that we bought from another company, moving to a corporate solution, an AOL-wide solution. We were in the middle of transitioning from one to the other. We had already stopped one, and we were waiting for the other one to get working. Actually, we're working on trying to get that working that week. That's one reason why those guys were up in D.C. So the images, we were actually serving our own images at that point in time. We pulled all the images back into CNN Center during that time. So we had some of our precious servers that should have been behind CNN actually serving images. This is one reason why we were only at 10. We also had a few promos coming up on some of our other sites. And we were moving stuff around, positioning our load, positioning our servers for what we anticipated load coming up later in the week. And we got CNN down to 10, which was too low. I mean, not just for the event, but was just too low in general. On September 11th, we decided, we really need something now. We need to get as many hits out of here as we can. And we went ahead and rushed the deployment of this corporate image farm solution. And it didn't work. We thought we knew how to do this. We said, well, yeah, we can just put this in place and do that and that, and it'll work. Well, we couldn't get it to work. We spent a long time, relatively speaking, it was about an hour, trying to get this to work, to serve our images up, and nothing we tried seemed to make it work. Finally, we gave up, said, well, this is not working. We thought it would be a quick solution, but clearly it's not. Let's go back to using the outside service for our images. Made a quick phone call, and then once again, we were using it. So that was finally, we got that back, and by that time, then we were running again. We were at full at that point. There were a few other things that surprised us, though. I talked about the network congestion earlier. We've experienced this now a couple of times after September 11th, where we have a situation where this is actually induced partly by our load balancers. We're seeing a lot of overhead traffic on our network, and it has something to do with the way we have the network designed, and it has something to do with a bug. Well, I shouldn't put it that way. It has something to do with the software that the load balancers are using. So that's a problem that we're currently working on. That surprised us. We hadn't ever driven that much load in this infrastructure before, and with that amount of load, this problem manifested itself, something we'd never seen before. Okay, or if we had, we didn't know what it was because it didn't last very long. Well, now it was lasting for a very long time, and we weren't sure what it was. The other thing that surprised me, this is actually my corner of the world, we maxed out on the number of simultaneous sessions on the web server. Not that the server itself couldn't handle it, but the configuration wouldn't allow it. And there was plenty of room left in the server. There's plenty of cycles left in the server, but the configuration was constraining the web server from running that many simultaneous connections. And one of the reasons why we're in this position was because our hits were so light. They took no processing power at all to serve these hits. And we'd never been in that position before, and now suddenly we're out of sessions. We can handle so many of them now without inducing any kind of CPU load. So we had to go in and make an emergency change to the configs to double the number of sessions that were allowed. This was another surprise that we had. Let's take a look at that. I walked in one day. This actually was October 5th. I walked in on October 5th. This is a board that we have up in the atrium of CNN Center. It's our, McDonald's-style board, I guess. And I walked in, I looked up at that, and I said, oh, I hope we have room for another digit. you know. It turns out we did, which is good. But I'm serious, I did. I walked in and looked up at that, and oh my. We served a lot of pages this year. More than I think we wanted to. So what have we taken away from this experience? The volatility that we experience, the volatility that we expect as a news site is worse than ever before. We saw an increase rate of doubling every 7 minutes, which is something we'd never seen before. We saw an upper limit much higher than we'd ever anticipated before, even outpacing elections by a wide margin. We need, because of this, we're getting to the point where we have enough servers. We can't run our servers the way we've been running them, right? What worked with 20 servers does not work with 200. And the growth has been slow enough that it's taken something like this to wake us up and say, hey, you've really got to do something now, okay? And this is back to an interesting story that I heard a few years ago. It sounds kind of cruel, so maybe I shouldn't say it, I don't know. But if you take a frog and put him in hot water, boiling water, he's going to jump right out again. But if you take the frog and put him in lukewarm water and slowly heat it up, he'll never move, okay? Because he doesn't know it's getting hotter, all right? This is the same kind of thing that we're experiencing. If suddenly our traffic doubles, we wake up and say, oh my gosh, we got to do something. But because the growth was slow and gradual, just, you know, a little bit more every day, and you look at the graphs and you can see over the course of a year, hey, our traffic really is growing. But because it's slow and we got to add one more machine now, and then, you know, a month later we'll add one more machine, we'll bring five more in and spread them around our pool. It's slow and it's insidious, and we don't realize we're getting to the point where the way we're doing things now, where our infrastructure and our methods won't scale beyond a certain point. And if we try to do it, we get into trouble, okay? Up until now, taking 3 to 6 minutes to swing a box was not a problem. Well, that's when we only had 10 boxes and we only had ever had to swing two, because it would take 6 minutes, you know, to swing two boxes. Two people, 3 minutes, we were done. All right, well, we're not dealing with those numbers anymore. Now we're dealing with 20, 40, 60, 80 servers. Okay, much bigger problem. So we've got to fix that, right? The other thing that came out of this was the newsroom should not wait for us to tell them to bring the page down. They're smart people. You know, they know what a breaking news story is. They sent the mail out to everyone's pagers, okay? And they know if it's a major story. They make these judgment calls on other things. They can make the judgment call on our website. They don't need to hear from us to know that they need to reduce the page. So we just told them now, you know, if this is going to be a breaking all hands situation, just do it. Don't even wait for us. Just do it. Go down to a half-height page. That buys us time. That takes a load off of our servers, buys us time to make a move. Okay. Obviously, we need to redesign our network, and we need to reconfigure some things. In fact, we've already done that. We've already done quite a bit of that. Well, we've done quite a bit of work since September 11th, redoing things so that it scales better. I didn't mention this before. It turns out, after the fact, we figured out, if we had been successful in keeping the servers up, because remember the images were being served out of here too, all right? If we'd been successful in keeping everything running and serving every hit that came in, we would have run out of bandwidth. Yes, that 2 gigabits of bandwidth wasn't enough to serve all this stuff. So we needed more bandwidth, and that is already in place also. And the other thing that we've taken care of, we now have a standing bridge reservation. It's a bridge that is all ours, paid for in advance, to use whenever we need it, with 24, 32 ports, something like that. I don't remember the number. What's that? It's a lot, yeah, says Dan. It's a lot. It's enough, okay? Everyone knows what the number is. Well, we still send the number out on the page, but everyone knows what the number is, and it's the same number all the time. No more of this messing around with calling the phone service people and saying we need a bridge now and doing all that stuff. It's there now. And a complete, total review of our crisis procedures. And this wasn't just our group that did this. This was all of Turner. I did a complete review of their crisis procedures, of their catastrophe, you know, the contingency planning. Or they have a great euphemism for it. They call it the business continuity plan. That's their name for it. Which is pretty descriptive without being kind of negative. So, you know, I wonder how long it took someone to think that one up. Now, to the last part of the talk, why do you care? I mean, this is interesting. And you probably all have your eyes popping out saying, I never realized they handled that much traffic and all that. But you're probably saying to yourself, this doesn't really affect me and my sight. Oh, yes, it does. Because it's not really the volume of traffic that was our problem. We could have served it. Okay, we had enough capacity in-house that we could have served the volume that came in. It would have been tough, but we could have done it. It wasn't the volume. It was the rate of change. All right, the fact that we had stuff doubling every 5 to 7 minutes, we could not act fast enough. Okay, and if you think that it can't happen to you, well, you're being a little too optimistic, I think. Here's some examples. On September 11th, now, I happen to be a pilot, and I'm a member of an organization of pilots called AOPA.org. Now, those of you that, you know, well, you all know what happened to the airspace on September 11th. It was completely shut down. That was everybody. Everyone out of the pool, okay? All planes had to land, big and small. So all of these private pilots and all these business pilots, you know, the corporate one, the ones working for airlines, they talk to their airlines, but all the other ones were saying, what's going on? When are we going to get to go back up in the air again? They all went to the AOPA, the Aircraft Owners and Pilots Association. They all went to that website to find out what was going on. Well, guess what? It couldn't take the load. Their load went up by a factor of 6. They had 6 times as much traffic as they normally have, and they couldn't handle it. Okay. Same thing happened with the National Business Aircraft Association, the people that, you know, the biz jets, the people that fly and run the biz jets. Same thing happened with their site. Their site collapsed. In fact, AOPA was down for days. It was up and down, I say, for days. It wasn't stable for several days. Okay. Some other classic examples. I mean, these are sites that you don't normally think of. You know, AOPA has a certain number of members and a certain number of hangers-on, okay? So there's a very limited number of people that would actually want to go to that website. Well, they all tried to get there at the same time, and then some. So that was very unexpected for them. Here's some other classic examples. Remember the elections, right? When they started having problems with the Florida elections, with the bad ballot and the recounts and all that stuff, did any of you go to try to find information about the election from the source? Okay, that was the election DOS state FLUS site. It tanked. Couldn't handle the load. Way beyond anything they had ever thought of. Because no one outside of the state of Florida would normally care about Florida elections. Okay? Proven wrong. Another classic situation here is when your tires start blowing up, okay, and you start having to recall them, a lot of people are going to come to your website to find out how to get their tires back to you. Firestone site couldn't handle it. And another situation almost as sobering as the one that we went through on September 11th was the terrible events that went on at Columbine High School a few years ago. And everyone in the country and beyond was suddenly very interested in a little high school called Columbine in a suburb of Denver. And they all tried to get to the website for the Jefferson County Schools. And they couldn't handle it. And then finally, probably the mode that all of you have thought about or have heard of, something called the slash dot effect. And this one just happened so recently, this one deserves an honorable mention, because this is such, you'll love this, all right? There was a site, aceshardware.com. This is not Ace Hardware. This is some other little consulting firm, aceshardware.com. Beefed up their website, they did a complete redesign of their software and their hardware, and they thought, oh, this is really cool. We've just made things so much better than they were, and it's so lickety-split fast now. Let's write a little paper about it. And they did. They wrote a paper describing what they had done and the methodologies that were different than what most people did. Kind of a way of saying, you know, look at what we did. Look at the different way we're thinking about this problem. This is the way you should think about it, too. Put it on their website. Some Slashdot reader thought, hey, this is a pretty neat thing. Posted it on Slashdot. Within 15 minutes, this wonderful new website with this wonderful new technology was down. Okay? The moral of the story here is that it can happen to you in a very unexpected way. Obviously, current events can trigger it. You could be your site could be completely tangential to the events, like the AOPA site. Or you could suddenly find yourself in the thick of a nationwide controversy, like the Florida Election Board. Or because of a problem with one of your products, with one of your company's products. Suddenly, everyone needs to find out information about what you're doing. They're going to come to your website. And on it goes, okay? This is why you should care. Not because of the volume. There's not too many sites that do the level of volume that we do. But because of the rate of change, something unexpected happens and suddenly, boom, you know, you're down within minutes. You go back and look at the timeline, you'll see that by the time the first page went out, we were already in very serious trouble. By the time the second page went out, by the time we had a bridge line, which was our primary means of communication among people, by the time we had it and had that news out to the people responsible for running things, it was already way too late. We were already so hard down that, you know, we were no longer in the midst of trying. What do we do with the website? If you are responsible for a website, or if you're responsible for a data center or database system or anything that is a corporate-wide resource, you should have contingency plans. You should have them written down. You should have them formalized. You should rehearse them. You should review them. And you should update them. I know this sounds incredibly boring, and nobody wants to do it. But I think we all now understand that it must be done. It must be done. Okay, and I got another little story to tell you. I know I'm running long on time here, and I hope that they will forgive me. There is when they got all the planes out of the sky, that was actually a procedure that was planned. That's something called SCTANA, the Security Control of Air Traffic and Navigation Aids. It's an order in the Air Traffic Control Bible 7610.4. It's in there. It's an order, SCTANA. It's been there since the Cold War, when everyone was afraid that the Soviet Union was going to come and attack our country. They were afraid that they would use our airspace against us, our nav aids in our airspace, navigational aids in our airspace against us. The Department of Defense wanted a way to immediately take over the airspace, be able to shut down the navigational aids if they had to, get all the civilians out of the sky so they could tell who was friendly and who was foe. So they wrote SCTANA, and they put it out to the air traffic controllers, and it sat in their binders for 40 years, almost 40 years. It was never implemented until September 11th. They never had a need to use it. But every now and then, I think it was every year or so, they took it off the shelf, they dusted it off, they opened it up, and they made all the controllers go through it. Say, this is our procedures. This is what we have to do if this ever happens. And all the controllers sat around the table making jokes, yawning, thinking about their hot date tonight, or, you know, wondering when dinner was, and so on and so forth, not really paying much attention to it, because this was an artifact of the Cold War. This is something that we would never have to worry about, because it's never going to happen. Expect the unexpected. Because when it happened and they implemented it, they had an orderly process to get the planes out of the sky and to get them somewhere that they could land. This is actually part of the procedure. Where can we put these planes? We can't just tell them, you know, land at the nearest airport, because the runway might not be long enough. Okay. They had a plan. They thought about it ahead of time. They wrote it down, and they formalized it, and they practiced it, and they went over it, and they revised it. And part of the problem that we have in this industry is stuff moves so fast that a plan we write today might not be valid in 5 years. Heck, it might not be valid in 2 years. So you got to keep going over it. Okay. Even if that plan is nothing more than saying, this is as much as we can do, and if we go over it, oh well. You know, if we go over this level, we're just going to live with that. Even if that's your plan, fine, but write it down so that everyone knows. So not only so that you know and that your boss knows, but so that the other parts of the organization know what they can expect. So they won't come back to you 2 weeks later and say, well, how come you didn't stay up? You know, well, we told you, this is as much as we can handle, and it was 10 times what we could handle. Even if that's all it is, write it down, formalize it, okay? So if you can take some things away from this, there will be surprises in your life, some of them pleasant, some of them not so pleasant. You need to plan for them. What helped us out tremendously was our ability to do some quick troubleshooting on the spot. It really helped us a lot, be able to figure out, you know, narrow things down. Be willing to break the rules. You know, formalizations and stuff are great, process is great, but sometimes you got to work around it in an emergency. You know, there were some things that we normally do that we just simply didn't do that day. We just said, forget it. You know, we're going to sidestep our normal process here and just do what needs to be done. Process is great until it gets in the way. And, you know, hopefully that only happens about once every 10 years. Okay. I want to thank all of you for coming at such a strange time. I know that this is kind of a weird a weird slot for a talk to be scheduled. And I want to thank all of you for the kind words that I've heard through the week and for your support. So, thank you. And I'll take questions. Where's Paul? There he is. Come on up here. Here's a couple of the other guys from CNN. Dan Galloway and Paul Holbrook. Dan is one of the guys that was actually in the thick of this. Okay, he's the one that was sitting there with the TV on. All right. And it's he and his team that was responsible for swinging all the machines into place. And Paul's just a nice guy, so I called him up here. So. We got time for a few questions, then we got to go eat. So we'll start over here.
I was wondering, what was involved in swinging a system in general?
Well, I can answer that. I don't know how to do those. Well, the web server that we use has a configuration directory, basically. We also have virtual IP addresses that we have to put on the box so that that direct server return stuff I talked about actually works. And there's mount points also. We have our content mounted remotely. So there's three major things that have to change. And we have scripts and stuff to do it, but it's still a mechanism where you have to log in, and you have to get the old mounts off of there, the old VIPs off of there, put the new VIPs, new mounts on, change the configuration. And it takes a few minutes. You got to bring the old server down, take the old configuration out of the way, put the new one in, bring it up. So it's, yes, we can automate it. We just haven't yet. And that's now bumped up in price. It's been on my list for about a year now. We need to automate this. Well, it's now a lot higher in the list of priorities, believe me. Over here, yes.
Do you think it's worth automating the process of reducing the content? You said that was almost the most valuable thing. You could just have each server goes, wow, I'm over 20,000 hits per second. The editorial people gave me the lighter version. I'll just start running it now.
Well, that's, I don't know if we've actually considered that, doing that over there. I don't think go for that. But what we have done is we automatically now, we didn't do this before, we automatically build pages both ways. So switching is very, very simple now. It didn't used to be. Just a matter of moving one file from here to there. I think they'd rather that be a decision made by hand, though. I don't think they want the servers doing that automatically. They get mad when things don't go as expected. You know, how come this isn't out there? It's been 40 seconds. How come it's not there yet? So, yes.
Much along the same lines, have the designers actually looked at making the pages a lot more cacheable so that the load can be handled by front-end caches at the customer end?
I'm sorry, the load can be handled by what?
Well, being dynamic content.
Oh, but it's not.
It's not? It is
no.
Semi-static?
It is semi-static. It's parsed HTML. Yeah, we don't do any dynamic content because it's too much overhead. Yeah, so maybe that answers your question. Yes?
Well, it seems to me that you certainly wouldn't want some of them making a decision to go light and some of them staying heavy. It would confuse people.
That's probably one reason why I wouldn't want to do that.
I want to say it's really fascinating to see all this because the point of view that I saw it from is that a bunch of sites weren't accessible and I ended up visiting Slashdot.
Yes.
And Slashdot had decided to cover this piece of news even though they normally wouldn't because they couldn't find their way into news sites very quick, so he just took what he had been able to get and started posting it as a story. And I think that probably helped a lot.
Yeah, the few people, which I know everyone in this room pretty much probably knows what Slashdot is, but the general public has no idea. They never heard of the site. And for those of us who thought to go there, yeah, that was a tremendous help. By way of reference, by the way, their highest load was 70 pages per second. I don't know if that works out to per minute. Someone do the math on that?
They also had to go light.
They had to go light, too. They were at 4,200 pages a minute. And they served 3 million pages that day, and we did that in, I don't know, a couple of minutes. But yeah, now to their, I don't say that to denigrate what they did. They did a fantastic job as well. It's considered they're not getting paid. Okay, we're getting paid to do this. They aren't. And it was just three guys that got together. If you haven't read the story, you should go look it up so you can still find it. It was like September 17th, I think, or so when it was posted. Three guys basically got on the phone with each other and kept that site running. And they were one of the few which actually had information about this that didn't go down. They slowed up a little bit, But they kept it running, and that is to their credit. I was astounded that they were able to pull that off. That's something.
The discovery that they actually had information, which was what caused them to quail and have to go light.
Yeah, yeah. Okay, over here.
I was curious to know where, if the you said some important people were out of town and so forth, and what happened as far as management level decision making. Did people start doing things autonomously because you couldn't get the bridge up? Or did they resist and not do it at all, or they just waited too long? How did that work?
Well, that's a very good question, actually. Just so that you know, the people that were traveling did have cell phones or did have access to phones, and were able to call into the bridge once the bridge got established. So they were still in the loop in the decision-making process. We weren't without our leader. But not everyone could get on the bridge. And yes, there were some things that were done more or less autonomously by the people that were in charge of some of these various groups.
Did that work or cause more problems?
Actually, no, surprisingly it worked. Many of the things that they decided to do were the right things. I don't think anything that they did, any of the decisions at all that day, except for the one with the image cache stuff, I don't think any of those decisions were the wrong ones. They didn't hurt anything, and most of them got us closer to our goal. So surprisingly enough, those autonomous decisions were the right ones in pretty much every case. So,
thank you.
One more? I ran over time and I apologize. We can just take one more over here.
I thought it was interesting that CNN.com is all served out of a single location. And
yes.
I was wondering if you guys had considered doing some kind of a more globally, geographically distributed kind of system with co-location facilities or whatever. And if so, why you've chosen to remain as a single centralized site.
Okay. Is it too late to say zero more? No, I can answer that in about a minute or two. Okay. I was actually expecting that question. I know it sounds frightening to say we run the whole site out of one facility, but you have to remember what this facility is. This is CNN Center in Atlanta. It actually has other things in it other than web servers. Turns out I noticed one day walking down the hallway, we've got a studio here, you know. In fact, we got about six of them. So it's very important to a lot of people that building still has power. And it already has redundant power grids backed by UPS filtering and generators, two of them with lots of diesel fuel in them. So there is a tremendous amount of infrastructure already in place to support what a colo could give us. And that was a big factor in deciding just to keep it all in-house. We have two computer rooms, actually in two separate towers. If you've ever been in CNN Center, you know there's two buildings and an atrium between. And we have one in each tower with cross traffic, and really the only thing that we don't have, you know, we have redundant connections to the internet through different service providers. Actually, now we're linked in very heavily with AOL's network, which is very redundant as well. The only thing we don't have is geographic diversity. That's it. I mean, everything else we've got. We don't have anything that a colo. I mean, everything that a colo could give us, we've already got. We have considered the possibility of getting a couple of places more geographically diverse. But there's a problem with that. We have some very unique requirements, and one of them is that when a story is ready to publish, that it get out there in a very timely fashion. And by timely fashion, I mean less than a minute. You know, when they say publish, they want to be there now. We've told them they're not getting anything less than 30 seconds, but they want it there now. So any kind of delay is not really acceptable when it comes to the news. The delay of moving it from here to two or three different places around the country or around the world would not go over too well with the editorial staff. And that's one reason why we've kept it all in one facility. Now, we might change that as we move forward. But we can't just say, oh, well, yeah, we'll just open one up on the West Coast and on the East Coast. That would take a tremendous amount of care and forethought and planning to do it in such a way that it doesn't sacrifice our ability to publish quickly. Okay. All right. Thank you.